So I'm John Bergman. I'm here on behalf of the Impact Group, and we have no disclosures to disclose. We're going to talk about the quality of end-of-life care in men who enrolled in our program, which is a low-income, a program for low-income uninsured men dying of prostate cancer in California. And I wanted to start by just explaining how we got to this topic and why we thought it merited investigation. We know that in 1976, we spent about $1,700 per person on healthcare. And we know that over the last three decades, the cost of healthcare has more than quadrupled. Now, this would be acceptable if the quality of the care we delivered also improved. And the most accurate metric we have to measure the effect that the care we deliver has on the health of a population is life expectancy starting at 40. And if we look at life expectancy starting at 40, among both men and women, there has been a small improvement over the last three decades, but the magnitude of the increase really hasn't been commensurate with the magnitude of the increase in spending. And the real question is, why is that? The question is, why is that, and how do we do compared to other countries? Maybe healthcare is just becoming more expensive everywhere. So if we look at 1976, we have life expectancy starting at 40 on the x-axis. So as we move to the right, we're living longer, and as we go up the y-axis, we're spending more. You can see that in 1976, compared to other developed countries, we did pretty well. We spent about as much money as everyone else, and our life expectancy was in the higher clumping of countries. By 1986, we were spending a little bit more than everyone else, and we weren't improving as far as outcomes compared to the other developed countries. By 1996, we had really started to separate ourselves as far as how much we spend, and we were starting to fall behind as far as our outcomes. By 2006, we spent almost twice as much as any other developed country on healthcare, and our outcomes were by far the worst. And the question is, why is that? Why is it that we spend so much money on healthcare and yet get so little in return? And a big part of the answer is because of the way we allocate our healthcare resources. We spend about a third of our overall healthcare resources caring for people in the last 6 months of life alone. So if there were a way to reduce that number, to make that 35% somehow lower, that would liberate a lot of resources that we could use and invest in keeping the rest of our population healthy. Now, the issue with the fact that we spend so much money caring for people at the end of life is we really have no idea whether or not we're doing a good job. We have no idea whether the quality of end-of-life care is good or bad despite all of this money that we spend. There is some population-based data that suggests that we're far too aggressive caring for people at the end of life. And because of that, there have been quality indicators developed so that we can start measuring what we're doing at the end of life and figure out if we should really be spending all this money caring for people in the last 6 months of life alone. So the purpose of our study was to assess the quality of end-of-life care in low-income, uninsured men who were prospectively enrolled in a specific public assistance program in California. Based on population-based data, both through SEER Medicare and in Canadian data, we hypothesized that end-of-life care would be inappropriately aggressive because all of the population-based studies to date have suggested that we're too aggressive with people towards the end of life. Our study cohort came from men who were enrolled in the IMPACT program. IMPACT stands for Improving Access, Counseling, and Treatment for Men with Prostate Cancer. It's funded by a $76 million grant awarded to the UCLA Department of Urology through the state of California. As you can see with the distribution of IMPACT providers, IMPACT establishes contracts with over 700 providers throughout California so that all of the men within our program live, almost all the men live within 25 miles of a provider. The vast majority of men are minorities, and they are all at least 200% under the poverty line, the poverty level. Care is delivered by a multidisciplinary team, which includes a medical director, nurse case managers, and clinical coordinators. IMPACT offers a lot of ancillary services in addition to just straight healthcare, and these services include culturally and linguistically appropriate educational materials. IMPACT has unfortunately gone through several budget odysseys, Every time people realize that California has no money, impact is always on the chopping block, but wisely, it's never actually been chopped, and it actually keeps getting renewed, and the grant money, thankfully, has not yet been cut. So we looked at all 60 men who died with an impact since 2001. As we said, the majority were Hispanic. We then abstracted all sociodemographic and clinical data and looked at the care that these men received at the end of life. And we honed in on those aspects of care which for which quality indicators have been developed so that we could get some quantitative data as to whether the end-of-life care delivered with an impact was high or low quality based on the indicators that we have. So three of the most important things that are always looked at with the quality of end-of-life care is ER visits over the last year of life, inpatient stays in the last 6 months, and ICU admissions within the last 3 months of life. You could see that as far as ER visits, if you look at the green, about a third of the individuals in our program made no ER visits in the last year of life, which is really quite extraordinary. About a third made one visit, and fewer than one third had two or more visits. So as far as ER visits, we did very well compared to the population-based data that we have. As far as inpatient stays in the last 3 months of life, you could see that almost half the men enrolled in IMPACT made no inpatient stays in the last 3 months of life, and very, very few of them, fewer than 20%, had two or more inpatient stays. So that's also good. And as far as ICU admissions, this was really remarkable that almost no one was admitted to the ICU within the last 3 months of life, and no one was admitted more than once. We then broke down each of the three main classes of quality indicators. The main quality indicators at end of life were those that were developed by Dr. Earle. The first thing we looked at was chemotherapy, and there's two different metrics we have when we study chemotherapy at the end of life to see whether we're doing a good or a bad job. The first is initiation of new chemotherapy within the last 3 months of life. And if you initiate a new chemotherapeutic regimen within the last 3 months of life, that's considered poor quality care. And you can see that that happened to none of the men in our program. The second metric that's used to evaluate chemotherapy use at the end of life is whether the final chemotherapeutic regimen was given within the last 2 weeks of life. And that only happened to two out of the 60 men in our program. So as far as chemotherapy use, the quality of care was really excellent within our program. The next quality indicator we looked at was high intensity care. And as we discussed, that includes ER visits in the last year of life, inpatient visits in the last 3 months, and ICU stays in the last 3 months. So the average number of ER visits, as we said, was about one, which is pretty good. The average number of inpatient stays is about 0.7, which is again good compared to the population-based data that we have. And as we mentioned, there were very few ICU stays in the last 3 months of life. So what this highlights is that the overall quality of care as far as high-intensity care is good, but there are a couple of avenues for improvement. The final quality indicator with respect to end of life is hospice care. And within hospice care, there again are two different metrics we use to determine whether or not we're doing a good job using hospice. The first is the overall proportion of individuals dying of any disease who enroll in hospice. And you can see that about a third of the men who died with an impact enrolled in hospice. This is comparable with men dying of prostate cancer in the general population, but again represents a huge avenue for improvement because a third is probably too low a number, and really every patient should be at least counseled on the hospice option before they decide whether or not they want to enroll. There was a lot of talk about reimbursing physicians just for having the conversation. That got parlayed for political reasons into discussion of death panels, but it was never actually proposed as a death panel. It was actually proposed as just ways of encouraging us to have the conversation with the individuals. But because people chose not to pick that fight, that never actually made it into the final healthcare bill. And that, unfortunately, I think is going to be somewhat of a hindrance to improving this proportion of men who enroll in hospice at the end of life. But again, with an impact, we did about as well as people do in the general population, but it is a significant avenue for potential improvement. The second metric we have when we look at hospice care is the proportion of men who enroll within the last week of life. If someone enrolls in hospice within 7 days of death, that's considered not a long enough period of time for them to maximize all of the resources that hospice has to offer. And you can see that only about 10% of men who within impact enrolled within the last week of life, which is good. There are several limitations to our study. Our study size is obviously small, and our findings are only descriptive, and they need to be validated in larger programs. Most importantly, I think men who enroll in IMPACT present with a much more advanced disease state than most men in the general population, and I think that makes our findings even more striking, because when the men present to the IMPACT program already at such an advanced disease state, that gives us less time to counsel them and really prepare them for all of these end-of-life discussions. So the fact that within IMPACT we did as well as we did, I think is quite extraordinary given the advanced disease that they already presented with. And I think that for men who present at a more localized or local regional stage, we'd have an even better opportunity to improve their overall use of hospice and limit their inpatient and ICU stays at the end of life. Finally, you know, IMPACT has a comprehensive care model, as we discussed, and I don't think that our findings are generalizable to other models of healthcare delivery. So in conclusion, it is possible to deliver high quality end-of-life care to the most disadvantaged men at the end of life. There are several avenues for improvement, as we discussed, and IMPACT is a comprehensive care model, and I think maybe it's a model that should be replicated more as we think about the ways that we should restructure our healthcare system, because as several of the studies that we've done on the IMPACT population have shown, it is possible, even in the most disadvantaged men, to deliver high quality, low cost care with this comprehensive care model.